Hey, it's Sparky Pfeiffer, 55 past the hour. Time for another Milwaukee Sports Timeout here on 1250 AM. The Fan calling all Baconator fans. Didn't think the Baconator could get any more iconic? Well, Wendy's just proved that wrong. For a limited time, try Wendy's new Pretzel Baconator. It's the classic you love with six strips of crispy applewood smoked bacon. And now the new pretzel bun. You need something supremely iconic. The Pretzel Baconator is there. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's. Being joined now by our guy, Dave Gasper of ReviewingTheBrew.com. Follow him on Twitter at DGasper24. Time to talk some Brewers baseball. And how about it? Brandon Woodruff back with the crew after he and many others thought his time in Milwaukee was done. They bring him back on a multi-year deal, including an option for 26. Even though he probably won't pitch this year, Dave Gasper, I still think it's a positive to have him in that clubhouse.
I think it's a fantastic move. I really do. This is something that as we got into spring training, teams could open up their 60-day injured list. I thought it was something that made a lot of sense, especially after the departure of Corbin Burnes in the trade with the Orioles this offseason. Getting Woodruff back is a nice win. And, you know, they didn't want to lose him for nothing. I think the plan always was, you know, trading Burnes and maybe holding on to Woodruff and Adames, and then Woodruff getting his surgery. They ended up, you know, almost having to lose him for nothing, but now they can bring him back. And I think for Woodruff, being able to return to Milwaukee and get a chance to rehab with the Brewers and get a chance to bounce back and just kind of end it more on his terms. I think it's something that both sides really, really wanted, and they were able to make it happen. And even though Woodruff isn't really going to be able to help this year, I think we're going to see a bunch of, you know, these young kids step up in the rotation. That's what they're going to be looking towards. But, you know, next year, Jacob Junis is probably going to be gone. You know, we'll see if Colin Ray is still there, but there's still going to be spots for veteran leadership in that rotation. And there's always going to be a spot for a guy like Brandon Woodruff if he can return to form, even with all those young guys, that could put that rotation in a really, really great spot in 2025.
You know, the other thing about this is when we start talking about, you know, the future of this Brewers team, I feel like we're in rewind mode and we're going back to the Doug Melvin era a little bit where you're going to have to rely on offense and fine pitching. The only difference it feels like is they're a little bit closer with younger pitching than Doug ever was back then.
Yeah, I think so, too. You know, the last couple of years, it's been about the pitching and defense for this team. Having that rotation, that three-headed monster of Burnes, Woodruff, and Peralta the past couple of years, that's been the strength of the team, and the offense has been the weakness of it. And this year, I mean, with the way that the rotation is slated to be, as much as I love Freddie Peralta, you know, Peralta, Miley, and Jacob Junis as your top three is quite a big difference from Burnes, Woodruff, and Peralta. So that offense is going to have to be a strength this year. The addition of Rhys Hoskins, I think, is definitely going to go a long way with that. And Jackson Churio, if he ends up being exactly what everyone expects him to be, this is really going to be a fantastic Brewers offense, one that we haven't seen really since 2018, you know, when that offense led the way for that team, and pitching was just kind of, you're just kind of going along with Yolis Chacin and Chase Anderson trying to find enough out of that group. But this team definitely feels more like that 2018, that more Doug Melvin type of teams as well, 2008, 2011, where the offense is the strength of the team.
This interview brought to you by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. Bet on all your favorite sports 24/7. Enjoy over 70 self-service kiosks, wall-to-wall TVs, free parking, great food, and a full bar. Bet big, bet bold. Learn more at paysbig.com. Let's talk about Gary Sanchez. This is a guy that the Brewers fans thought they had signed weeks ago, and it took up until Wednesday to get it officially announced. Apparently there was an issue with his wrist and a physical and so forth, but now have him under contract, yet a report that they're going to keep three catchers, which really opens up some eyes to what this depth chart is going to look like on opening day for the Brewers.
Yeah, it's a very interesting setup, and I'm wondering how long they're going to go with three catchers, and how that's going to shake out, because they did sign Eric Haas to that major league deal, and now you got Sanchez. And, I mean, it makes sense if you're going to have Sanchez be your primary DH and Contreras playing just about every single day. If one of those guys gets hurt, You either don't have a backup or you lose your DH for the rest of the game, which is neither of which is a desirable situation. But you don't want to keep Sanchez on the bench the entire time. So having a third catcher would be a smart move in that situation. But you only have so many bench spots, and having two of them taken up by catchers is going to be difficult. But I think also with Sal Frelick now being able to play some infield, that kind of versatility where if they need an outfielder, they can put Frelick out there, or they can put Frelick on the dirt. That kind of super utility, but still could play every single day kind of guy like Frelick, that could save them a little bit on that bench where they need as many spots as possible. It could give you an extra outfielder and an extra infielder.
I love the idea of Frelick playing on the infield. I've been saying it since April that he should be switched over to second base. Now they're going to try him at second and third. It's going to start right away on Saturday. They're going to play him at second or third base on Saturday. The reason I like it is, and tell me if you disagree, I think Frelick, if it all works out, could be essentially the leadoff hitter for this team for a decade if you have him at second base. And then your outfield, you know, makes a lot of sense. Then it's Churio, it's Mitchell, and it's Weimer out there, and you go. And first base, we'll see what that looks like. Obviously, Rhys Hoskins isn't a long-term answer. Shortstop probably is going to be Joey Ortiz, I would guess, or Terang, depending which way you go there. And then third base, you know, you got the draft pick, Wilkin, who's going to probably be up here next year at some point. That dude is thick, by the way. Holy crap. I saw a video of him hitting down in spring training. That is a big dude. So that's probably how this looks going forward. If Frelick can't play on the infield, then you have a jumbled up mess on the outfield. And I just don't know, because of Frelick's lack of power, can you justify him being in a corner spot in the outfield over what you have already? I think that's the struggle, and that's why he fits in better on the infield.
Yeah, I think of that group of outfielders, he's one that would best fit in the infield. Weimer doesn't fit, and Mitchell doesn't fit. But Frelick definitely has a size, definitely kind of has that look of a second baseman, although most of the social media posts we've seen of Frelick have been at third, which is another corner power spot, and Frelick doesn't have that much power. But ultimately, I think second base would be a great landing spot for Sal Frelick. It's a way to get his bat in the lineup, because his bat is certainly worthy of being in the lineup every single day. And, you know, just with all those guys that they have, Frelick and Mitchell and Weimer and now Churio, then you still have Christian Yelich too in that outfield. Finding playing time for all of them is going to be so difficult. So being able to move Frelick to the infield, if that's able to stick, I think that's a great way to get your best nine hitters in the lineup on any given day. And yeah, I think that'd be a perfect spot for him at second base, and he can lead off, and you know, him and Garrett Mitchell can lead right into Jackson Churio and Joey Weimer in the future. And you know, at the corner infield spots, I mean, Tyler Black, you know, I think he's also competing for third base a little bit. You know, Brock Wilkin, you could put him at first base. You could put Tyler Black at first base. They have a bunch of corner options coming up. So that infield, it's young. And once Willie Adames moves on, you know, there's going to be a lot of spots up for grabs in that infield next season. But that's where we're going to see guys play out this year. Terang, seeing if his bat can make the jump in year two, if Joey Ortiz can make the jump. Him and Terang are kind of similar players, and you know, just kind of not knowing what you're going to get offensively. I think Terang brings a little bit more speed to the table, so we'll see how it shakes out. But I think putting Frelick on the dirt is a great way to make use of all of those outfielders that they have without having to trade any of them away, because the Brewers haven't been keen on away their young talent. They want to keep them, and I thought they'd trade one of these outfielders this offseason, but just as good as moving one of them to the dirt so that they can keep all the bats in the lineup.
Exactly. Talking with Dave Gasper, reviewing the Brew. Follow him on Twitter at DGasper24, at DGasper24. Let's talk about Willie Adames and Devin Williams. A piece by Jason Stark in The Athletic going around the league, talking to different executives. It seems like pretty much everybody's on board that both of those guys will probably be traded. It might be traded this spring. What type of return would you expect for a Willie Adames if they are able to move him?
I think it'd probably be something similar to Corbin Burns and what they got back for him. Just the 1 year of team control. You know, starting pitchers and shortstops are different, but there's also a scarcity of starting shortstops that are available for teams that need them. Now, the Miami Marlins have been looking for one. They just signed Tim Anderson to a 1 year contract, so they're out of the shortstop market now. I would think at this point, now that we've gotten into spring training, that Willie Adames is likely going to stay. Matt Arnold said that they're planning to keep him. They anticipate keeping him. Now, granted, he said that about Corbin Burns too, a couple of weeks before trading him. So you really never know with Matt Arnold if an offer comes through. But I would anticipate Adames at least staying for now. But once we get to later on, I could see Devin Williams getting traded as well. They have Abner Uribe. They have a ton of power arms that could fit in that closer spot in the back end of the bullpen. So I could see a Devin Williams trade coming at some point. Adames, now that we're in a spring camp and all these guys are signing, I'm not sure there's too much of a market for him right now, coming off a down year as well. So, and once you get to the trade deadline, if the team's going to be competitive, which they likely are, the NL Central isn't that strong. If they're going to be in a competitive spot, it's going to be hard for them to justify, once again, trading one of their key players in Willie Adames. So I think he might end up staying at this point. But I said the same thing about Burns, and he ended up going. So you never really know what Matt Arnold is going to do.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And when we talk about, you know, Devin Williams and the opportunity of them trading him like they traded Josh Hader, how confident are you that they'll have a guy to kind of step into that role and maybe not be as good as Devin Williams, but be at least good enough for this team if they were to trade Devin?
Oh, I think they definitely got the arms for it. They definitely do. Abner Uribe has kind of been a closer in the making for a while. He's got that power stuff. Trevor McGill earned himself a late inning high leverage spot last year. He also is a power arm that they could fit in that role. Pyon's pitch well. Elvis Peguero has really great stuff. So they have plenty of guys that they could put in. Now, will any of them be as good as Devin Williams and as consistent as he's been? Who knows? We'll see. Relievers are always generally pretty volatile. But I think Abner Uribe has the highest upside and the most likely ability to reach that Devin Williams upside. So that they have the power arms. The Brewers have been churning them out pretty well, being able to get great bullpen arms these past couple of years. So I'd be pretty confident that if they end up moving on from Devin Williams, that they'd have the guys internally to take over that closer spot without skipping too much of a beat, as long as the trade doesn't disrupt the clubhouse as much as it did when they traded Josh Hader way back in 2022.
Well, what about the starting rotation? Give me your best crack at what you think the starting five is going to be before we get to the first exhibition game here.
I think the starting five right now, you're looking at Peralta, Miley, Junis, Colin Ray as your four, and probably DL Hall as your five. I think because they traded Burns for Hall and they believe in him as a starter, they're going to send him out as a starter and give him every opportunity to prove that that's what he can be at the big league level. So I think they're going to put him in there to begin. I think Colin Ray has a pretty good inside track to getting a rotation spot after what he did last season and the contract that he earned this offseason. So I think Ray and Hall are going to fill out your four and five spots, I think you're locked in the top three of Peralta, Miley, and Junis.
What happens to Ashby?
That's a major question mark. I don't know what happens with Ashby. I don't know how healthy he's going to be. It looks like, you know, he's throwing bullpens and doing pretty well right now and staying on track. But after missing a whole season, I'm not sure how much they're going to trust him in that right away and how many innings they want to give him in that workload. So I could see him maybe being the sixth guy, the long man out of the bullpen, maybe going to six-man rotations. They bring in Ashby, and he could just give them bulk innings that way somehow. But I could see him earning a spot, provided that he's healthy. I could see him earning a spot as a number six starter, long man, swing man out of the bullpen, and perhaps earning his way into that rotation or getting the sixth starter spot when they go to an extended rotation.
Last question, just how good is this team? Is this a playoff caliber team? Are they 85 to 90 wins? How good do you think they are?
I think it's going to depend on the kids. It's going to depend on if that rotation is going to be able to do enough. If Ray can repeat what he did last year, if Junis can be reliable, if Hall and Gasser and all those other prospects are able to tune up. But The NL Central is there for the taking. It absolutely is. The Cubs didn't really do anything to improve this offseason. The Cardinals didn't really do that much. They made the rotation older. The Pirates aren't really a threat. The Reds could give the Brewers a run. I think they absolutely could. But the division is certainly there for the taking. I think this is a playoff-caliber team. This is one that can get there. But they are relying a lot on young kids to help fill out that rotation. They're relying a lot on an unproven rotation, and they're relying on a lot of young hitters to make a leap in year two, Terang and Mitchell to stay healthy, and Weimer to make the improvements. So if those guys are able to make the improvements, this is absolutely a playoff team. If these guys regress or stay the same, it's going to be frustrating. It's going to be a long year.
I lied. I have one more. What's realistic to expect for Jackson Chourio?
Oh, real realistic to expect. I mean, I think there's going to be, I mean, there's obviously so many high expectations, rookie of the year type expectations. You know, and I don't think they're too unfair, but if you can get Chourio in his first year hitting 260 or so, and being able to show off that power a little bit and just not looking overmatched completely and still just kind of showing all the talent that's been in there. If you can get him hitting 260 and maybe with a, 800 OPS, I think that'd be a major, major success. Now, obviously, everyone's looking at him as a 900, 1,000 OPS kind of guy. He can be that kind of superstar. But if you can get 260 for a batting average out of him, I think that'd be a really great start to his career.
When he's on the bases, he can run, too. I mean, so regardless, absolutely, once he's on the base paths, he can steal some bases. You know, maybe he gets 30 stolen bases his first year, depending on how many at-bats he gets. Dave Gasper, follow him on Twitter at dgasper24. Of course, check out the website over at Reviewing the Brew. Are you guys still doing the Cold Brew podcast as well?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. We still got that going every single week. We were just talking on the last week's podcast about how, hey, Brandon Woodruff is still out there. The Brewers should get him. And sure enough, maybe Matt Arnold listens to the podcast. And he's like, yeah, we should totally do that. So, yeah, Cold Brew Podcast is still out there anywhere you find your podcast.
Yeah, I take credit for Pat Murphy deciding to play Frelick at second since I was on it all last year. I think he follows me on Twitter. I'm joking, of course. Dave, thank you so much, my friend. Have a good rest of your day.
Appreciate it, Sparky. Take care.